But what I've been doing recently is taking quite a hard look at the emergence of complexity out of fundamental physics, and then how that relates to, in particular, to consciousness and the way the brain functions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the most interesting, also the most fundamental thing, is what you told your cosmologic research and the questions that arouse when you do research in this field. And this is the interesting bridge and the fundamental bridge to philosophy and theology, because in this context you ask for the ultimate basis, the ultimate cause, of all, ultimate cause of the universe.
Yeah.
What position do you have in this context?
Firstly, I want to be very clear that physics cannot determine what the ultimate cause is, and there are many of my colleagues who are producing attempts at physical explanations of the origin of the universe, but in fact, although you can dress it up to look like physics, you're actually stepping beyond physics because you're doing things which are not testable. One's in the metaphysical area, and I see in the end really three different options, well, maybe four. The first option is pure choice, just things just happen randomly, in which case there is no cause, it's just the way things were. The second is the attempt to make things look probable. The third is the designer or purposive interpretation. And the final one is the evolutionary interpretation, which is interesting. And the evolutionary one is where you try to find a process which makes the universe over time become more like what we see. And this is what Lee Smolin has proposed, that there is a process of parts of the universe collapsing to a black hole, re-expanding through some unknown process, and then coming out with slightly different physical constants, and then trying to find if you could get what is in essence a Darwinian process of evolution taking place that would guide the new universes into a particular kind. And what he suggests is that through this process, as universes might become more likely to produce black holes, because that produces more daughter universes, and so is, in a sense, a more successful in terms of reproduction. I think that's a very interesting idea because it brings a biology understanding into cosmology. Now, the problem is, firstly, that he hasn't given the details of this, and secondly, it's not been tested in any way, and it may not be testable. The other way to try to make things look very probable from a physics viewpoint is to imagine that there's not one universe, but a multiverse, many millions, maybe even an infinite number of universes. And the idea there is that if there's a sufficient number of universes with sufficiently different properties, then some of them would have those very unlikely properties that allow life to come into existence. Now, again, the problem here is that this is not a testable hypothesis, and so you need just as much faith to believe in this multiverse as you do to believe in a designer or intelligent being who lies behind it.
Perhaps even more.
And additionally to that, in the end, it's not a fundamental solution, because then, as always, you say, okay, well, then why that multiverse? Why not a different multiverse? And in fact, there's no real reason why a intelligent designer might not like to work through multiverses. Mm-hmm. So, it's not a direct contradiction. You can have a multiverse idea and still believe in a designer who underlies the multiverse. It's not a real contradiction.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, in a sense,
yesterday yeah. it was an objection, I think, in one of our lectures.
Yes.
One indeed said a multiverse universe is not appropriate for the creator.
Well, that was based on a particular theological view of the world, and one can have different theological views. Logically speaking, it certainly is possible that the designer could work through multiverses. In fact, there's a beautiful old book on this which is called Star Maker by Olaf Stapleton, a very old science fiction book which puts this in a very nice way. So I don't see there's being an option. That objection was based on one particular theological view, but there is a whole host of possible theological views.
I also had the impression that it's merely an economical theology who says that God has not have to do a multiverse universe if he can fine-tune one universe.
Yeah.
So I think,
well, in a sense, the underlying question there is an interesting one: does God learn or not?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
and in a sense, the idea underlying God using multiverses is that God does learn. Now, that's part of the same kind of generic view that of process theology, where God is not a static, unchanging entity, but a changing one. And so I suppose the underlying question is sort of perfection of God. Does God learn or not? And the tendency of some strands of modern theology is to say, yes, God can learn, and in that case, the multiverse idea is quite a nice one.
You gave us four attempts how we can think about the ultimate cause of the world, and you have concept, you have an option. What criteria do you have to choose this option?
Two things, really. One is the fine-tuning, which is now acknowledged as a problem even by most scientists who've looked at it, that the universe we live in is extremely special. On the one hand, in that it could have been all sorts of other things, but it's special in such a way that it allows living beings to come into existence. And a lot of work has gone into looking at what those restrictions are. And it's very clear that most universes that one can imagine would not allow any life to exist. So then you have the fine-tuning problem, why this universe? And this is where the multiverse comes in as one solution, or the designer as one kind of solution. But then I think the point about it is, in cosmology, it's a question of what data you take into account. And so far, in essence, we've been accepting what most cosmologists do, which is we take data from physics, from astrophysics, from cosmology. But, of course, that's only one part of the data. There's a huge amount of other data based in human life, in the experiences we have through daily life. Now, that's not normally regarded by cosmologists as data, but, of course, it is, because we live in the universe, we're part of the universe. We have these experiences because we live in the universe, and there are data about the universe. And so the question is, what, if any, of that is data? And to me, then, what I focused on with Nancy Murphy is the issue of moral experience, and in particular of the feeling that many people have that there is a reality to good and to evil, and that then, if it's true, is then new evidence about the nature of the universe. So it's not evidence from physics, it's evidence from our daily lives. And then one enters the whole argument of moral realism or not, which we could go into if you want to. But anyhow, the point I'm making is that you can do cosmology, I like to say, with a small c, when you only take into account the data from the hard sciences, in particular astronomy, astrophysics. Or you can do it with a capital C, when you take into account the data from everyday life and the way people live in addition. And that's cosmology in the sense the anthropologists use the word, which now starts to talk about meaning and purpose.